This is Deborah Gordon and Roseanne Ariel, taping for National Council Jewish Women Oral History Project, November 29th, 1990. We're here with Marty Wolfson. Could you please state your name and your birth date?
Once again, Marty Wolfson, April 6, 1994.
Thank you. Who's the woman? We're here again with Marty Wolfson, and we were discussing the years
when you went back to Carnegie Tech, and then you started. You said you were starting to teach.
I didn't go back to Carnegie Tech after the war.
Right.
I started teaching at the School of Display Arts.
So that's at the Carnegie?
No,
where is that?
That was a private school.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me if I would teach there, and I started teaching like the former GIs and young people coming out of school.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could have a firsthand experience with art and in some of my experiences.
So what was the name of the school?
The School of Display Arts. Several years. The biggest thing was in 1951 when I started the college. Things began to happen there, because then I started getting the calls. When you're on live television, people can relate to you a lot easier than they can on tape. I started getting calls to a lot of schools, to various organizations to put on programs.
What kind of
programs? All musical programs, musical sketch pad programs, I called it. And I had games and participation. Always left a message with them.
Mm-hmm.
But always trying to make it very entertaining, very light, very enjoyable.
It sounds like children would love it.
Children respond very, very well. A couple of weeks ago,
I'm sorry. I never have this.
I was at the Lawrenceville Boys and Girls Club.
Uh-huh.
And put on a program for them on a Saturday morning. And the kids just ate it up.
Do you still do
this? Yes. Like, I'll take the How We Learn, okay? And I'll take the words L E A R N, and I'll make pictures for each one of the letters. Like L,
mm-hmm.
And I'll make a heart. I say we learn through love.
That's great.
Affection.
Mm-hmm.
And attention to each other. The E we learn through our eyes,
mm-hmm.
through our ears. What we hear, what we see. A we learn through the arts. Through art, music, dancing,
mm-hmm.
expression. The R we learn through reading.
Mm-hmm.
We must know how to read to gain information and education. And N, we need them all in order to be able to learn. And we learn from each other, from our parents, from our teachers. And I do this in these schools, especially to upgrade the teachers. And also to make the kids feel that it's important for them to learn from their parents. And that they can relate to tell their parents about it.
Now, do you do this for kindergarten children or for older children?
It's worked for all ages.
All ages.
They can understand it. Especially when you do it pictorial.
Right.
And then I do a program called Attitudes Change Things, Dedication and Action, Make Things Happen.
What's that?
It's built on self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Having a proper attitude. That's all done in words and pictures. And the audience participation and how getting, like teamwork, by getting people up and drawing lines on the paper and then turning it into a picture.
Oh.
Works every single time.
Oh.
It's very beautiful.
That would be great. Yeah. So you teach that type of technique to teachers too?
I haven't taught it to teachers.
But you do teach teachers, I read in your sort of your information, or you do workshops.
Workshops with teachers in that respect. But everything that I've tried to do has been stimulating and invigorating manner. And this keeps me going all the time, even when you have problems. Surprising. Your attitude is the most important thing, because how you think and how you react to things happening around you
makes
all the difference in the world. That's why we have so much stress and strain and uncomfortableness. And if I can go out and we're just in talking with people and stimulate and try to create self-esteem. For example, I might draw a head and I'll say, how to build self-esteem? You must be able to communicate, motivate, solve problems. And you do all of these things with pictures and they keep that vision in their minds. Whoever sees it, whether it's children or adults. And this is something I've devoted myself to.
So let me go back to one thing. That is when you, after you got married, where did you live? Can you tell us a little bit about your personal life at that time?
Yes, we originally lived on Beechwood Boulevard in Squirrel Hill. Right there for several years, and then we moved to North St. Clair Street in the East End. And then to Monroeville. We opened up the whole area in Monroeville. And by the way, in moving to Monroeville, because of my training as with the synagogue, I was able to almost be the initiated rabbi in Canton.
Yeah, that's what
I
said. I saw that
in one of the books. Yeah, because we all moved into an area that was brand new.
When did you move out there? Oh,
boy. It had to be in the, after I was married, in the 50s.
What made you decide to move there? It was new?
Yeah. It was new and it just seemed right at the time. We had wonderful neighbors, people that we... Oh, I know. To be specific with you, I had worked with the builder. I was helping him build his... do brochures for him and help him with his marketing program. And I got so interested in the houses myself, I decided to buy. And it was in Eastgate Manor in Monroeville. And that's from that we there's enough Jewish families out there that we started a synagogue of our own for our house of worship. It's called Temple David. And I designed its original logo. And now Temple David is a building all by itself. And so I was almost its the initial rabbi as well as its cantor. Well, it was almost a, I think it's Reformed. And there's another synagogue out there, I think it's more conservative. And I think it's Reformed.
And how would you define yourself, the family differences, the customs, the practices, Jewish? English one. Did you keep up the traditions that your family has had? Different?
Well, I even learned more because while we were living in Squirrel Hill, my wife and I were deploying Captain Emmanuel. I was a member there as a single individual, as far as matter. So I had connection with the synagogue for quite a number of years. And we carried it through, straight into our home and teaching our children, and making them aware. I worked with teenagers, kids of all ages, and also seniors at the same time.
Are you involved in any Jewish organizations?
Or? Bnei B'rith. I've worked with Bnei B'rith. I designed the logos for... I'm just trying to say. The Orthodox. It's an Orthodox group out in the Squirrel Hill. Designed their logo for... No, it's Boys and Girls.
Hillel.
Is there another one?
There's the yeshiva.
Yeshiva.
Which is more so.
Yeah. I'll tell you, you get involved. And people find out you can see certain things that you miss.
Do you have any hobbies other than your art and your music?
Hobbies.
I know.
Yes, I love to do the crossword puzzles. You know, I'll tell you something. Since I started really doing them, I started learning a lot about what words mean. And I enjoy it.
It's stimulating.
It's very stimulating. And I like doing drawings with my grandson. He sits on my lap and we draw pictures together. And we have a good time. It's enjoyable. So, all in all, art, music, and everything that you learn has a meaning, has a real meaning. And I like to share these things with people I come in contact with. Because, I think it's something you can all benefit from.
What about your children? Do they go to Hebrew school? Are they involved Jewishly? Are they connected
to Jewish Well, my son was bar mitzvah. There was no bar mitzvah at the time my daughters were growing up. But they were all subjected to Sunday school at Temple Emmanuel. Because they were very little. They lived in Georgia. But, I don't know how much they can remember from the time I was singing at the high holiday services. I loved it. I loved it very much. I've done a little bit of it sometime. It's just something that keeps on progressing.
Do you still do that?
Not as much as I have done it in the past. Things are just a little bit different now. As you grow older, you try to use the experiences you've had to teach others and to help others to learn and to share with others. Because, for example, that one little book up there called Great Events in American History, it's a good frame up there.
Mm-hmm.
It was done with somebody named Richmond, and that was given the Freedom Foundation Award. And we did that in the United States until the war with Vietnam. And I felt something had to be done to recall the good things about the United States, because everybody was in the slowest day. And so, you know, things come out. And you never know when they're going to come out, and they do.
And that was all the power that was given to the time.
Great. It helped. That was it, and that's also the first one that indoctrinated the black into American history. have Martin Luther King in there, Charles Drew, who created the blood bank, the whole beginning of the blood bank. He died because they couldn't get blood to him, and he was in the mountain flies. You see, that's why you record these things on paper, as well as on tape. But see, with paper and books, you not only see pictures and read words, but they come together, and you can see and hear, and understand and relate and recall much more that way. And it's everlasting.
Do you read a lot of books for pleasure in your free time? I mean, or there are certain types of books you like to read?
Certain types of books. And when I've been involved in creating and reading so many manuscripts that...
You have a point of view when you're looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah, I look at it a little bit differently than in fact most people do. And it's very interesting and it's very informative. And you learn something new all the time.
Do people send you manuscripts regularly?
Well, I try to. They usually call me, and I try to. Now I have to. Just keep it mostly on a business-like basis, or else you can just want.
You mean they're submitted, or you ask for them to submit it? Unsolicited manuscripts, or you get a stack of them.
You can go Meshuggah. And you have to do it on a consulting basis.
You have an emphasis, I noticed. What would you say your trademark type book would be? What broad... I mean, how would you classify them? I mean, because there's sports, but there's histories, there's...
I would say mostly all my books are done on a historical basis. On a historical, documentative basis. Things that are informative, that document things that have happened. And sometimes it's a prediction of what could happen. But all my sports books are documenting things that have happened before. Mm-hmm. And the accomplishments that were made by a good many people in that particular sport. And I did a book with a doctor who called me and he wanted to do a history of a book that he... hospital that he was associated with, and he got sick towards the end of the book and actually passed away. And thank God I had the information, and I was going to be able to complete it with his wife. And we got it out, and it turned out to be a memory. So these things happen. You do the very, very best that you can under the circumstances.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of material today. You must be tired. Well, maybe you're not tired. You have boundless energy, but we have to call it a day for today. And if you want to think about things for next time we meet, or
what we'd like
to
do, think about
we have to index
which areas we can pursue.
And whenever's convenient for you. It does. There's no time period that has to be done.
Yeah. Why don't you go over the material when you get a moment?
Mm-hmm.
And once you see what you have and what you might need, then give me a call. Because I think this to do anything like that right now. Because you can learn a lot from what's already been done.
That's true.
Well, that's fine.